Molesworth. Episode 1, Home Life.
Hello. I suppose perhaps I'd better introduce myself for the benefit of those of you I haven't met. I mean, I know radio audiences are small, but I'm assuming they're not that small. I'm called Nigel Molesworth. Maybe a familiar name to some of you. I enjoyed a certain notoriety in my youth while I was a pupil at a, well, I suppose for want of a better word, I'd better say a school called St. Custard's. At that time, I was gracious enough to share with the world some of my precocious wisdom on such subjects as how to cope with life, the meaning of the universe, and how to flick ink pellets. Well, you'll be glad to hear I'm still prepared to share my wisdom, though now, of course, it is of a more mature and finely honed variety. Yes, listen to me, and you will learn to understand what has always been my guiding principle, viz., how to get by with the minimum effort. But first, a brief resume of my life in the 30-odd years since I last went public. Well, I was actually for a time in... Oh, but you don't want to know all that. Suffice it to say that I am now, well, let's say, round the 40 mark, that I'm employed, that I live at number 17 Arbutus Avenue in the leafy purlieus of Wimbledon.
And that you're married?
Ah, yes, and that I'm married. Hadn't forgotten, dear. And God knows I've tried. That was my wife, Louise. Louise and I, well, Louise mostly, have also perpetuated the Molesworth dynasty with two children, whose names Louise chose. But how is it, you ask, that someone like me ever got married? I mean, certainly St. Custard's didn't give me any preparation for matrimony. No, say what you like about boys' prep schools. They may not give you much in the academic line, but they'll certainly see to it that you end up with some very peculiar ideas about sex. I remember the scene now as our headmaster, Grimes, edged his way agonisingly slowly towards the subject.
Right now, boys, settle down. Quiet, please. Today, in Divinity, we're going to do something a little different, something which I feel may be more practical than our usual approach to the subject.
Oh, sir, do you mean we're going to act on David and Goliath? Oh, great, sir. Bags me, David.
Yes. No, Molesworth.
Oh, please, sir, I did Baggy first, and then Peason can be Goliath, and
no, Molesworth.
And I can buzz a brick at him, and yeow, yeow, splat, his face will look more like a squished tomato than
no, Molesworth, will you listen, boy? We're not acting out David and Goliath.
Can we do Samson instead, sir? Pulling buildings down, sir, and spifflicating people with the jawbone of an ass?
No, Molesworth.
Cain and Abel. That old girl with the tent peg.
Molesworth! Ah, we're not acting out anything. When I said today's lesson will be practical, I meant practical in application to your lives. Today, I want to talk about morality. Now, can anyone tell me what morality means?
Sir!
Now, wait a minute, Fotherington Thomas. Let's see if someone else knows the answer. How about you, Peason?
Is it one of those things you use to tell how much oil there is left in a car engine, sir?
No, Peason, it isn't.
Sir!
Oh, come on, surely someone else knows. Molesworth, Gillibrand, Grabber. Oh, very well, Fotherington Thomas, you tell us.
Morality is that element in an action which renders it right or wrong, or, alternatively, the duties of ethical practice not necessarily related to a system of religion, sir.
Very good, Fotherington Thomas. Now, I want to talk about morality in particular in relation to ladies, to women, to girls.
Girls, yes!
Well, they're soppy.
Quiet, Molesworth. Now, those of you who have sisters will know that there's a difference between girls and boys. Now, you have a sister, don't you, Fotherington Thomas?
Oh, yes, sir. Arabella. She's an absolute brick and the best sister a chap could ever have. She has flowing locks and delicate features. She's good and kind and gentle and loves animals and believes that there are fairies who live under toadstools.
Does she, Fotherington Thomas? Well, that's quite charming. And tell me, in what way is she different from you?
I can't think of any way, actually, sir.
Well, as you can imagine, given circumstances like that, our progress in finding out about sex was pretty slow. And, of course, this is back in the 50s, when you didn't just have ignorance to cope with. There was prudishness, too. I remember Grimes once setting us a divinity prep.
And tonight, boys, you will learn by heart the Ten Commandments, omitting number 7.
He couldn't cope with the embarrassment of the follow-up questions, you see. The result of his shyness, actually, is that I've got through my entire life without ever having been taught that adultery is wrong. I did once try pointing this out to Louise and suggesting that, therefore, I could hardly be blamed if I got a bit friendlier with Charlene at the office, but Louise didn't see it my way. Under these circs, though, given the almost total lack of information on sexual matters which I received from either St. Custard's or my public school, Grunts, we're back to the question of how I came actually to get married to Louise. Well, quite honestly, I can't remember. I mean, I can remember the when and the where, but I can't remember the how or indeed the why. The venue was bad enough. Even my manly cheek succumbs to a blush when I confess that I met my wife at a young conservative hop. Not my usual style. I'm not a political animal. Indeed, the only political thought I admit to is a vague feeling that everything ought to be shared equally, so long as that doesn't include my things. But Ian Gillibrand from St. Custard's had roped me in. He had political ambitions, you see, and I suppose at that stage, 3 years out of Grunts, he thought I might yet become a PR consultant, local councillor, mafia hitman, investment advisor, bent solicitor, or someone else useful to an aspiring Tory politician. I arrived at the church hall, resplendent in my DJ with the drainpipe trousers and rolled satin lapels that I'm still waiting to come back into fashion, to be greeted by Gillibrand.
Hello, Nigel. Don't buy a raffle ticket for party funds.
What's the prize?
A copy of Ted Heath's The Joy of Politics, a pub grabber and grabber celebrity whip-off books at £6.50, signed by the author.
No thanks. The lights are jolly dim.
Yeah, so are most of the girls. Look, let me introduce you to someone. How about Louise over there?
Which? What? The one in the blue strapless dress held up by some spin-off from the pipe cleaner industry?
Yes, that's her. Convent educated, they always say they're the worst one.
But what do you mean, rampantly sexual and lascivious?
Actually, give Gillibrand his due, he didn't answer that. So I couldn't have got him later under the Trades Descriptions Act.
May I introduce Nigel Molesworth? Nigel, this is Louise.
Hello.
And there she was. Just my luck. The one girl in the room who wasn't dim. I remember saying hello back to her, but my memory, assisted by a particularly vile fruit cup, has drawn a discreet veil over the rest of the evening. All I know is that when I was next aware of time, Louise and I were, in the young conservative parlance of the time,
going steady.
What?
We are going steady, Nigel.
Are we?
Yes, of course we are.
Well, you may be, but I'm not sure that I am.
Of course you are, Nigel. We both are.
Oh. You sure?
Yes, Nigel.
And that was it, really. Suddenly going steady became getting married. Odd. The only comparable experience I can think of is when I had my wisdom teeth out. There was the same not unpleasant, vague loss of consciousness, the same tampering with my sense of time, and the same feeling when I finally came round that I'd been kicked in the face by a horse. And there it is. So, I'm a married man. And I suppose it's all right. Really? In some ways? I mean, Louise isn't a very sort of demonstrative woman, but then you can have too much unquestioning devotion in a wife. I used not to think so. But that was before Basil Fotherington Thomas got married. Dear, oh dear. He first introduced me to his intended at a Friends of the Soil Wimbledon chapter whole food cheese and homemade wine party.
Hello, Nigel. Super to see you.
Ah, Basil.
Nigel, have you made a will yet?
Oh, I should have mentioned to you that the dreaded Fotherington Thomas has become a solicitor of all things.
Nigel, there's someone I really must introduce you to. Here.
Hello.
But I know you. You're Basil's sister, Arabella.
No, I'm not.
No, Nigel. That's Arabella over there in the hand-woven goat's hair smock and macrame snood.
Yes, I made it for her.
This lady in the hand-woven goat's hair snood and macrame smock is Arabella's school friend.
School friend.
Araminta.
Oh.
My fiancé.
Oh.
Isn't she wonderful?
Well.
Do you know, every time I look at Araminta, my heart fills with all the colours of the rainbow.
Basil.
Oh, really?
Yes. I want to just skip through the meadows saying, hello, clouds. Hello, sky.
Ugh. Some things never change. I sometimes have hideous fantasies of what it must be like in the Fotherington-Thomas household, just before Basil returns from a hard day's soliciting. Imagine, if you will, the kitchen of an Edwardian semi in the leafy purlieus of Wimbledon. It is decorated in Laura Ashley cowshed style. Any pine that can be stripped has been stripped. There is a print of desiderata on the wall. On a stripped pine table, Araminta and Arabella roll out manure-coloured whole food pastry with a stripped pine rolling pin. They sing their old-school song as they work.
Who for bat, who for ball, who for hockey and lax and all, Miss Dennis is strict, Miss Hamilton's fair, but Miss Peabody Jim is most strict and tall.
Times that we had at St. Dulcie Bella's.
Oh, indeed. And none happier than the first day I met you, Arabella. For if I had not met you, I would not have met Basil, from whence springeth all my happiness.
I hope he will like this whole food leek, nettle and comfrey quiche.
I am sure he will. For the food prepared with the hand of love satisfies not only the hunger of the stomach.
I wish I'd said that, Araminta. Oh, all is happiness. Oh,
yes, indeed. Hello, clouds. Hello, sky. Oh, hark! I hear Basil's key in the log.
Oh, joy!
Oh, bliss!
Ugh. No, when I stop and think of it, I'm sure I'm better off with Louise. So, now you know how I came to be married. But how did I come to find myself living at number 17 Arbutus Avenue in the leafy purlieus of Wimbledon? I remember the day even now. It was distinctive because I felt relatively at peace with the world and I hadn't even been drinking. It was a Saturday afternoon in autumn. The children, you know, the ones whose names Louise chose, were out at a party. And my spouse and helpmeet herself was curled up on the sofa reading some lesser-known Guatemalan poems of the 15th century, Pub Grabber and Grabber, frightfully obscure books at 1595, which was just the sort of thing to keep her quiet for a couple of hours. Also, I felt financially secure. In our little three-bedroom semi, we'd reached a kind of economic equilibrium, i.e. we didn't get overdrawn until halfway through the month. So I was slipping peacefully into a reverie of Charlene from the office appearing at the door of my Jamaican hotel, complaining that she couldn't undo the clip at the back of her dress, and me pulling the toweling wrap around my sunburnt frame as I...
Nigel!
What?
Nigel! We need a bigger place.
Bigger place?
Yes, a bigger place. We need a bigger house.
For why?
We need more space. Besides, the houses up near the park are a lot more select.
Oh, yes. With Louise, I should have guessed that snobbery came into it somewhere. I tried to remonstrate. But Louise, we have grown to love this old house. It is so full of memories of our early married life and of the children when young. Actually, when I come to think of it, that could be one of the few arguments in favour of moving. But, undaunted, I press on. This house is like an old friend. We have invested so much time and money and energy into it. It is our house. Every nook and cranny says Molesworth to each spellbound visitor. It is part of me. It has my unmistakable stamp all over it.
What, you mean diagonal bookshelves? Wallpapers whose pattern doesn't match? And little clusters of holes in the walls where you tried to find the joists?
I am talking about character, Louise. This house is us.
No, Nigel. We need a bigger place.
Well, there's no arguing with Louise when she's in that mood. In any mood, come to that. She starts looking at ads in the local paper for 4 buddhams, 3 recept, 2 buthams, fit kitch. And pretty soon, the inevitable visit has to take place.
Ah, good morning. Are you the estate agents?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
Well, my wife wanted...
We?
Yes, we wanted some details on the houses.
Of course.
What sort of thing did you have in mind?
Well, nothing very elaborate. Maybe a cheapish semi or...
4 bedrooms, 3 reception rooms.
Ah, 4 bedrooms, 3 recep.
And can we ask what sort of press fringe?
Press fringe?
How much can you afford?
Oh, well,
Go on, tell them, Nigel.
Well, we probably got to about... would you mind coming a bit closer?
No.
Of course not.
Well, I think if we really pull out all the stops, you know, don't eat for the next 3 years, that sort of thing, we could run to,
Yes, it's no fun trying to make it in a yuppie area on my salary. I'm not upwardly mobile, anyway. Utterly immobile, in fact. The only thing upwardly mobile about us is Louise's ambition. painfully I visualize the scene that follows our departure.
That was funny. I haven't laughed so much since that unlady sailing fell in the day after she'd exchanged contracts. I picked a good ass like that on an income like that. Yes, the finances in need of a little improvement. So what should we do for them?
What about number 17 arbiters of...
But the... That's what Spittle!
And the rising temp! And the subsidence!
And the mental husk next door! And the abattoir!
I don't know. The fact is that some people are good at things like house purchase and some, viz me, just aren't. My appalling brother Steve, for example, known in an earlier incarnation as Molesworth II, always lands on his feet where finances are concerned. Steve, I should mention, formerly best known for his frightful rendition of Fairy Bells on the St. Custard's School piano, now, ironically, works in the music business. He does something obscure and almost certainly criminal in the management of pop groups. Anyway, take the business of the rafters. Allow me to present you two parallel scenes, both featuring the same oily estate agent showing a prospective buyer the loft of a house. Incidentally, the oily estate agent bears an uncanny likeness to my old St. Custard's headmaster, Grimes, and my current boss, Grint. In the first scene, my appalling brother Steve has just arrived in his Porsche at a mansion in Notting Hill.
These rafters, of course, are yet more of the house's attractive period features.
Don't come that one with me, sunshine. Anyone can see they've been chewed to bits by a woodworm.
Really?
Thinks. Does the twit realise that these rafters are clearly rare examples of authentic Jacobean carving on timbers originating from vessels of the Spanish Armada, which will add trillions of pounds to the value of the house? End of thinks.
Oh dear, yes, that does look a bit like woodworm, doesn't it?
Which I'm afraid means I'm going to have to drop my offer on the house by 30,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I want a snap decision or I back out. Will you accept that offer?
Oh yes, of course.
There's one born every minute.
But somehow, when I do that sort of thing, the scenario works out differently. I mean, when I turned up in my N-registration Avenger to look at the Arbutus Avenue loft, this is what happened.
Rafters, of course, are yet more of the house's attractive period features.
Mm-hmm, yes, yes. But, do I detect the telltale signs of woodworm?
Oh, don't come that one, sunshine.
Oh, no? Then what are all those little holes?
The former owner was an enthusiastic darts player.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, and anyone who knew anything about it could tell that these rafters had been treated for woodworm anyway.
Let me have a look. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Now you come to mention it. I see, of course they have.
Come on, I want a snap decision or my clients will back out. Will you offer the asking price?
What? Oh, yes, of course.
Right then, let's get downstairs, get some papers signed.
There's one born every minute. Okay, woodworm, come on, chaps, get munching!
Yippee!
Munch.
And so it was that I first saw number 17 Arbutus Avenue, Wimbledon. Of course, I still did my best to wriggle out of it. Do you realise, I said to Louise, just how much it costs to move these days? There's stamp duty and removal men and estate agents' fees and solicitors and...
We can get Basil, Fotherington, Thomas to act for us. I'll have a word with Araminta.
Oh, no, more machinations over the macrame. The trouble is, everyone seems immediately to know what we're up to. Daryl Pacey greets me in the office the next morning with the words...
Hello, Molesworth. Here you're moving.
Maybe.
Of course, when Carol and I moved, we did our own conveyancing.
Yes, well, you would, wouldn't you? I think loftily.
I saved over £750.
Really? I think. Rather less loftily. So, I go to the library that evening and get out Grabber's Guide to Conveyancing, Pub Grabber and Grabber, Very Long-Winded Legal Books at 1795, and see if I can understand it. Well, That doesn't take long. So the next morning, I ring Basil Fotherington Thomas.
Fotherington Thomas Partnership.
Basil, it's a...
Hello, Nigel. Super to hear from you.
He actually means it, poor sap.
Nigel, have you made a will yet?
No, I...
Well, don't you think you should have done?
Yes, I
hear you're moving.
I don't understand it. Everyone seems to know.
Anyway, Nigel, have you sorted out your finance yet?
Huh?
Finance? You know, mortgage. Have you been to the building society? Or the bank?
Well, no.
Well, don't you think you should have done?
Yes, I suppose so.
And don't forget about that will you, Nigel? Bye.
And that's it, really. The Centurion tank is up and rolling. And after financial agonies too gruesome to catalogue, the Molesworth family ends up in number 17 Arbutus Avenue. Our moving in is the signal for three things to happen. First, the house next door to our old house, identical in every particular, is sold for twice as much as we got. Second, the kitchen ceiling in the new house falls in. And third, the mortgage rate goes up by 2%. Oh, and fourth, don't let me forget, Louise, having said from the moment she first saw the Arbutus Avenue house that it was exactly what she'd always wanted, starts, and the minute we move in, changing everything in sight. Which means I get dragged down to Grabber's home decor department to look at wallpapers, ect.
Do you think the red flowers are a bit too cottagey for the guest room, Nigel? Do you prefer the pale blue? This one would set off that washstand we inherited from Auntie Stella, wouldn't it? Do you think this embossed effect is too like an Indian restaurant? Is the pink a bit, you know, chintzy? What do you think, Nigel?
The answer, of course, though it'd be more than my life's worth to say it, is that I don't think anything. It's not the sort of subject on which I have thoughts. My only concern with walls is that they stand up, something I do not yet feel confident about in the new house. But I can see the way the wind's blowing. Oh, yes, the danger signs are there. What all this means is that I'm about to get enlisted into the dreaded DIY. Ugh. With the predictable result that very soon the new house has all the distinguishing features. Diagonal bookshelves, wallpaper whose pattern doesn't match, and little clusters of holes in the walls where I tried to find the joists, which so offended Louise in the old house. Oh, I don't know. Oh, no. Shut up, you little horrors! Oh. I did mention, didn't I, that Louise and my union had been blessed with issue? Oh, yes, of course I did. Well, that was them. The ones whose names Louise chose. Oh, all right, what the hell, you'll find out sometime. My children are called Tristram and Lucinda. There, I've said it. Ugh, Tristram, Lucinda. I'm afraid neither of those names is ever going to trip off my tongue. They don't seem to go with Molesworth that well either. Difficult thing with names. Some of them just don't fit the people who have them. And there are some jobs, I'm sure, which people with certain names just couldn't do. Oh, when I joined the mobsters, I thought I'd go far. But instead I'd blown it, I should have known it, that you don't get nowhere in the mafia. If you got a name like Keith, if you're called Muggsy, Bugsy, Froggy, Fingers or Fats, if you're called Mangler, Strangler, even Spats, then you can scare the public, make them chatter their teeth. Not a chance, though, if your name's Keith. Oh, just to hear a contract has been taken out spoils the repose of a mafioso. They all start laughing when it gets about that the hitman's name is Keith. And all I get when threatening on the boss's behalf, no knuckles whitening, tightening, they just laugh. And then I look a dumbo and I feel inept, making offers they can't accept. Oh, so I left the mobsters and I'm going straight in the civil service. I'm not so nervous, cause my pinstripe suit is still appropriate, and everybody dares call Keith. Yug. Tristram and Lucinda. I don't think I'm ever going to get over that. Actually, I often wonder what they think of us. The kids. I mean, living in the same house. Not that they had any choice in the matter. Well, nor did I come to that. The moment Louise decided it was time to breed, she bred.
Yeah, but what do the kids think? Actually, I got a bit of an insight when Louise dragged me along to a parents' evening at their primary school. Tristram's class had been set to write a story entitled My Dad. Of course, teachers only set that kind of work because they're nosy. And I must say, I find the results quite interesting.
My Dad by Tristram Molesworth. My dad is quite fat with glasses. He has only got hair round the edge of his head. He likes beer and cigs, although my mum says they're bad for him. He has a fat tummy from all the beer and cigs, and when he breathes over you, it smells like beer and cigs. My mum keeps trying to get him to have intelligent conversations, but he would rather nip off to the pub with his friend Peason for more beer and cigs. He is a sad disappointment to my mum. She reckons she was meant for better things. He likes watching rubbish on TV, but mum always wants to watch Channel 4. He has a job, but it doesn't seem to do much there. He doesn't have a hobby, except the beer and cigs, and sitting in an armchair watching TV or listening to early music like the Beatles, I think that's what they're called. I do not want to be like him when I grow up. There's got to be something better than that.
Quite sobering, I found it when I read that. And yet, you know, maybe the lad's got something.
Molesworth, based on characters created by Geoffrey Willans and Ronald Searle, was written by Simon Brett. Willie Rushton starred as Molesworth. Grimes was played by Clive Swift. Louise by Penelope Nice. Gillibrand, Robert Harley. Peason, Bob Sinfield. Frotherington Thomas, Phil Nice. And Arabella by Chrissy Roberts. Una Burnham provided the music. The producer was Mark Robson. And we'll be back with Molesworth at the same time next Tuesday.